Now you know there's nothing that warms my heart more than some hand clapping, foot stomping gospel at Christmas time. Come on, PJ, sing this song with me.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in KBOO this Monday, December 15th at 11 p.m. as Gremlin Time once again presents Catherine Dunn reading the Father Christmas letters.
The interest and importance of Father Christmas extended beyond his filling of their stockings on Christmas Eve, for he wrote a letter to them every year, in which he described in words and pictures his house and his friends and the events, hilarious or alarming, at the North Pole.
So tune in KBOO this Monday at 11 p.m., as Catherine Dunn reads the Father Christmas letters by J.R.R. Tolkien.
We know a KBOO membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community and media by making a donation during our KBOO Fights Back campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000 goal will go towards everyone's favorite music, news, and public affairs programming all year long. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
Yeah. Melody, melody.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Before we jump into today's show, here's a reminder that our KBOO membership drive is going on now through the end of the year. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you, but only 10% of listeners are donors. We have until now relied on $110,000 in grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but since Congress voted to close that, those crucial funds will not be available next year. It's difficult and frustrating, but together we can keep the station alive and thriving for years to come. It's already been 57 years and counting, but we need your support to continue delivering quality independent programming, so please help us reach our $75,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give on the internet. That's kboo.fm/give. And as always, we thank you for your support. Well, today on Pathways, we're going to talk about addiction. And there are very many different perspectives on this topic, ranging from the 12-step community's view that it's a disease, a lifetime disease at that, an incurable lifetime disease, to Dr. Gabor Mate's idea of addiction as a trauma response, to psychologist Bruce Alexander's explanation that it's the result of a chronic lack of connection. Today's guest has an additional take that it is useful to view addiction as a response to an overly yang lifestyle, which emphasizes and values extreme and aggressive tendencies, without enough of a yin approach to life to balance it out with gentleness, compassion, and letting go of what is not within our control. And boy, do we see a lot of this extreme and aggressive acting out these days at the highest level of our society. Our guest today is Doug Hilton, co-author with Montauk Chia of the new book, The Tao of Addiction and Recovery. Qigong practices restoring the energy flow in mind and body. Doug has been a counselor for more than 30 years with extensive experience in trauma, addictions, and couples and family issues. A certified universal healing Tao instructor, he's been integrating Qigong into his counseling practice for more than 20 years. Fascinating. Well, hello, Doug, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Give me a little history. Tell us about your decision to produce this particular book, which you collaborated with Montauk Chia.
Well, I could trace the roots back to my own personal history growing up in a small town in Alberta and seeing that drinking and smoking, and for a lot of people doing drugs too, was part of the lifestyle, and seeing the effects that it had on family members and on the people themselves. I did wonder already, well, what is this all about and why does it happen and what can be done about it? And then eventually, once I finished my master's degree, I started working in the addictions field and trying to sort that out more formally. When I went to Dow Garden in 2003, I saw a lot of people there. I could recognize from working years in the field already that some people were not only there for health reasons in general, but for dealing with addictions as well. And some people told me directly. And so it planted this seed in my mind, like, oh, I should do something about this someday if I can. And so I was paying attention to how those practices in the system that Montauk Chia teaches in Thailand were helping those people. And then I started incorporating them into my practice and started gathering information about how I could offer this to people and eventually put it in a book.
Fantastic. I'm glad you did. I'm really having a great time reading the book. The second half of the book is actual practices and exercises that you recommend in the book that people don't undertake without some guidance, without some expert support. But we'll get to that. But, you know, let's talk about addiction for a minute. And you point out that addiction is not a problem of losers or a weak character, which is a common misconception. It's generally accepted now that addiction is not something that a person wants, as if, you know, willpower should be able to change it just because we don't want it anymore. Well, we never did want it. Okay, so Taoism references the dynamics of nature and how we can move in harmony with those dynamics if we so choose. So let's talk about how addictions develop, because you maintain the Taoist point of view that it's useful to view addiction as a response to adopting an overly yang lifestyle. Now, that doesn't contradict the trauma theory or the other thing that we mentioned. But anyway, tell us, what is your take on how addictions develop as a counselor for 30 years in the field?
Yes. So it's a great question. And the topic is very complicated. If addiction was a simple thing, people would just stop. I mean, people can recognize, hey, this is causing problems for me. And as we know, the addiction affects everybody, not just dumb people. Smart people, capable people get these problems. So how come they can't stop? And part of the reason is because there are many levels to the problem, many ways we could look at it, none of which completely capture it. Like you said, it's a disease, it's a compulsion, it's a bad habit, it's so many things. And also, Master Chia and I were adding in there that it's also a problem in the energy flow in the body. So if we restore that, then we give people a better chance to be able to deal with the addiction and stay away from it. because as you know, and many people know, addiction isn't a choice. It's something that's unconscious. Thoughts come automatically, urges come automatically. And so it's affecting the energy systems in the body. If we don't treat those, then people are left to just kind of hold on somehow, which would be similar to trying to just control your ability to blink or go to the bathroom or breathe just with your willpower. It's only going to work for a while.
Right. You know, it kind of reminds me, you know, I think everybody is dealing with addiction from a very broad Buddhist philosophical point of view. You know, craving is the cause of suffering, and people in craving kind of has a mind of its own. So maybe a lot of the addictions that people have are not creating harm in any obvious way, but being addicted to approval or being addicted to attention or being addicted to being right, you know, these things maybe cause harm in indirect ways, but it seems to me that, you know, this is the nature of life. I was a meditation teacher for a while, and somebody came up to me and go, well, you know, I think I have an addictive personality. And I said, yeah, of course you do. That's why you were reborn. The last addiction is the addiction to being somebody special, being somebody separate. But anyway, what's your take on that? You know, see, especially with this yin and yang out of balance thing, that's such a great perspective. But so in addition to the Taoist practices that you help people with, add to their lifestyle, what is your general approach to addiction? Do you use a particular kind of therapy like NARM or EMDR or IFS, or, you know, what do you do in addition to prescribing the Qigong stuff?
Right. So the way I look at it is that, well, statistically speaking, we'll all have some kind of an addiction in our lifetime. And like you said, it can range. These days, there are lots of behaviors that have become real problems for people that we didn't think of as addictions before. Gaming, right. Gambling, sex, food, shopping, internet, screens. So many things like that. There are everyday things that are becoming a problem. And I think it's helping us to understand that the whole thing of addiction, the whole concept, is like a continuum. You know, there are some things that are on the less harmful end of things, like coffee or something like that. And there's others that are more obviously and more quickly harmful. But there's a huge range. And so I remember when I first learned about the 12 steps, where they were talking a lot in the meetings when I would go check them out about the normies. And I used to think, oh, who are these normies? I thought I was one of the normies. But we all have the same kinds of roots, is my conclusion. And mm-hmm. whether they actually get turned into something or not, or right now, that's the variance in people. But my treatment then has to reflect that. So over time, in addition to standard counseling techniques, I've brought in a lot of the universal healing Tao Qigong system that Master Chia teaches for specific ways to show people how to treat aspects of the problem that we don't often treat well enough in most treatment services, like sexual urges, like self-confidence, compassion, being able to shut your mind off. You as a meditation teacher would know how important this is, right? Those kinds of things. And the EMDR thing you mentioned, our first book together, Master Chia and I, was combining EMDR with some of the universal healing Tao practices to create something new that's a little simpler, that covers more of the body in a systematic way, and is more of a self-help tool. So I bring all of those into my treatment with clients these days.
You know, you mentioned in the book that people who have addictions often have a history of broken trust. And so they have difficulty trusting even in the best of times. Uh-huh. And I think that is, they have difficulty trusting themselves, obviously, because they feel like they're out of control. Uh-huh. But these days, you know, it's very difficult to know who to trust. You know, there's such a bias against expertise and such a, you know, an addiction to being, to have righteous opinions and blaming others. You know, so what, I suppose if we, you know, where are we ever going to find solid basis for trust going forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where I think that Taoism has such an advantage for people, because it's not a prescriptive philosophy. It's not a religion. It's not forcing people to believe in certain things. And the universal healing Tao Qigong practices are just helping people have a method to be able to tap into their own truths, to get past the debris of life that's accumulated in them and confused them, and to get down to the root of what do they really believe? What does their intuition tell them? What do they need? By just getting in touch with their own true nature and the nature around them. And so it doesn't require having to abandon their old beliefs or swallow new ones or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that beliefs are a major cause of addiction, or that they are an addiction in and of themselves. This whole concept that, well, if you just believe the right thing, you're going to be saved, or you're going to, you know, be able to fix any problem. I think we rely way too much on beliefs. And I'm reminded of the Zen motto, cease to cherish opinions. And it's my opinion that every belief is an opinion. But anyway, yeah, so how do addiction and recovery differ from a Taoist perspective? I mean, and what is recovery? How do you define that?
It's a really good question, and it's complicated to answer because it depends on who you ask. Generally, the consensus these days in most circles in addiction recovery is that recovery is not just stopping the addiction, but then developing a new lifestyle that basically is so much better without the addiction that you wouldn't want to go back to it, and helps the person to stay away from it. It doesn't necessarily mean perfect, absolute abstinence all the time, because just like anything else, we can slip. I can slip just walking down the street and trip on a sidewalk crack or something like that. And so this is a much more complicated problem. It's unrealistic to think it'll never happen. We don't want to give permission for that, but it happens. And so it's about developing a new lifestyle. But then the whole concept in Taoism and the universal healing Tao Qigong is about not just a better lifestyle in terms of new hobbies or something like that, new friends, but learning how to go deeper and be able to connect spiritually, to be able to feel basically full on the inside, so that you don't need to feel like you need to fill yourself up from the outside, and be able to do that in such a way that it doesn't require a lot of external stuff around you, things to buy or people to validate you or some kind of external support. So it's more of an emphasis that way.
Well, yeah, and I would make the counter argument that we just inherently need external support. I mean, that's what a secure attachment with your mother is all about. And I think if people didn't have that, or they had this chronic trauma of neglect or of exploitation or abuse, that they're gonna have this longing for an external connection. Isn't that, don't you think so?
I think so. But then what do we do with that? And so some of it is developing a healthy life around you. We don't want to pretend that that's not a factor. Of course it is. But at the same time, we also want to have, like I remember learning in graduate school from marriage and family counseling training, the prof saying to us, relationships work best when they're a bonus, not a requirement. And I thought that was a pretty profound statement. You know, so that if you feel whole on the inside generally, then people and circumstances and things can come and go, because we can't always rely on those, but you're still okay. So that's where the emphasis.
So would you say that to a large extent, we generally don't feel whole on the inside because we're too out of balance with regard to yin and yang?
Generally, yes. And then, like you've said, for example, Dr. Gabor Mate and other people are talking about, Dr. Bruce Alexander is talking about connection. Dr. Gabor Mate is talking about the connection with trauma. So there's sometimes really big reasons why people don't feel that. And so we need to reestablish those things.
Yeah, well, how do you do that? I mean, is the Qigong going to do that for a person? Just the practice of it? I mean, how do we find fulfillment when we feel empty because of the lack of connection? That was never our fault in the first place, but nevertheless, it's a deep wound for many, many people.
Yeah, I don't mean to make it sound simple, but it is the goal. If we just ignore that and say, oh, well, that's the way you are, then that'd be really rough for people. The technique that I was talking about before, that was the subject of our first book where we combined EMDR with some Qigong practices. I used right. that quite a bit with people in the beginning to help them clear out old emotions that are getting in the way, because that often helps. The system, if you call us a system, we're designed to right ourselves. And so if you get a lot of the big blockages out, I picture like a carburetor, you know, if you get a lot of the big stuff that's been crammed in there, that's clogging it up and not letting it move out of there, then the machine will start to move on its own again. And I find that with people, you clear out the old feelings about neglect or abuse or what bullying, whatever happened, you know, old beliefs, negative beliefs that are formed about themselves. And then there's room for positive virtues to grow again inside of people. And then the other practices in the system really help to support that process and help to blossom people again from the inside.
I think there's a sea change happening in the world of Western therapy that is leaning more towards respect for the somatic approaches to stuck energy, like you are helping people with. And that's a beautiful thing. I think it's hard, though, for people, especially people like me, who are so cerebral and so, you know, addicted to trying to figure things out, as if I could just figure out the answer and just fix it. And the intellectual approach doesn't really work. And that's one of the limitations of CBT, is that, you know, it depends on, you know, do you change your beliefs or you give yourself affirmations or what have you. I just don't think that that's very effective without the somatic side of it.
It's often how people end up coming to see me. They do those other things first, and it's not a waste of time. They've helped to kind of, if I picture like an attic in a home, they've helped to kind of go out and sort a lot of things out and put them in boxes. They just don't know how to put them away. And then it's our job together when they get here to do the rest.
Right. Now, compared to the Western way of life, the Taoist approach to life would be considered countercultural. It encourages people to strive less, let go of attachments, and search for inner peace over material gain. Yeah, wow. That's a quote from your book. And it encourages people to strive less. That, you know, we live in a culture that is so addicted to hustle. Everybody is hustling. I'm generalizing, but I mean, people are hustling so much. They're just in a hurry all the time. I know I've had that hurry sickness where I can hardly stay focused on what I'm doing because I'm already thinking about the next thing I'm going to be doing. And that's like an epidemic in our society. People are so insecure financially. These are very, very difficult times from a mental health point of view, it seems to me. But on the other hand, it's opening people up to realizing they need help. They need mental health support.
Yes.
And that's where you come in. But I think I'm worried a little bit about perfectionism, and you talk about it in the book, the overcoming perfectionism and striving are hurdles for people in recovery. And I'm thinking perfectionism can be a hurdle in recovery. You know, sort of like this idea you talked about, abstinence and slips, you know, and that's a common, AA insists on total abstinence, and anything less than that is a relapse, or some people would call it a slip. But then there are these Buddhist recovery groups and the smart recovery groups that basically allow for some some return to being a normie, I suppose, you know, where there's where you're allowed moderate indulgence, or that, but you know, that's not always possible for people. Like if they have this like serious physical addiction to alcohol or nicotine, you know, it's kind of hard to just for them to scale back. But some people, don't you think moderation is possible for some people?
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. If someone's addicted to something, then moderation is not. Yeah. But in the end of it all of these different programs are aiming for the same thing. They all want to get the most amount of abstinence in there as possible. And the realistic truth is that, because I've worked in 12-step-based treatment centers, some people are detoxing in the parking lot on their way to the meeting. It's just, or onto the way to the program. The fact is that people are, they're going to do the best they can, and they're encouraged to come back to all of them. I think the 12 steps deserve some credit too, because they were the original counterculture in this process. They've always advocated. I remember when I went to my first 12-step meeting just to check it out, my boss sent me, they had Easy Does It up on the wall, and I thought, Easy Does It, that's lame. Wow, how's that ever going to help anybody? But that was a response, and still is, to that perfectionism and that striving that you're talking about. They've always talked about how to, in their own way, talked about how to kind of let that stuff go.
Yeah. Well, Easy Does It would be a good Taoist motto, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, go with the flow. Yeah. Well, you know, I keep coming back to the idea that Taoism values the underrated power of being small, and it helped people find ways to stop proving themselves. And this can in turn, as you point out, help prevent someone from resorting to an addictive behavior or substance to medicate their frustration and disappointment when they feel unappreciated. Yeah, you know, this is kind of a, Taoism is so humble, you know, it's just, it's all about humility, or it's, you know, humility is a big factor. I think it's a really, that's a really difficult thing to sell in our society, don't you think?
It is a part of that counterculture, yes. But it's emphasizing the value of not pushing ourselves beyond what we're capable of, and that nature tends to kind of value the small in the end. The ones that really try to seem, I'll say, 10 feet tall and made of steel, they usually end up becoming a target because of that. You know, and so it's a way to talk people out of, I mean, thinking about the day, the small is about helping people to realize, you know what, the stimulants like cocaine and crystal meth and all that kind of stuff that make people feel really big and tall and strong and invincible actually aren't so helpful. It's better to just choose a middle path.
Right. Well, we only have a couple minutes, but I want to make sure to mention that the second half of your book is all practices such as detoxification and unwinding the body, gaining self-confidence, transforming toxic patterns, getting full and restful sleep, and for releasing trauma. And you say, as I said earlier, readers should not undertake these practices without receiving personal training from a certified instructor. Okay, so where do they go? What would they do? Where would they go for that?
There's a variety of places to go. On Master Chia's mantakchia.com, there's a listing of the instructors that are all over the world at this point that they can search out to be able to get personal instruction. They could go to Master Chia's online training programs, or take training from him on his videos. He's always doing online training or in-person training. He still does a fair amount of a world tour. They could come to the new treatment program that I'm going to be offering in June in Dow Garden, which is Master Chia's center, where we spend an entire month practicing these things. It's just important to know that, like, you might think you've got the idea, and maybe you do, but it's good to make sure. I remember learning Tai Chi from Master Chia from a video, and then I went to Dow Garden and tried to get certified, and I was showing it to the instructors there, and they looked at it and they said, after I was finished, "That's great. What is it?"
Oh, wow. Hey, Doug, there's so much more we could explore, but we basically have run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, where they can go to get more information about what we've been talking about and everything that you do. And that is fullcirclehealing.ca. CA for Canada, right?
Right.
All right. fullcirclehealing.ca. And we love Canada on Pathways, and we miss the Canadians that used to come in droves. But I don't blame you a bit. So that website, once again, is fullcirclehealing.ca. That's all one word, Full Circle Healing. And thanks, Doug. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Now, for those who may be listening to Pathways Live on a Sunday morning and tuned in late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, producer of the Visionary I Ching Oracle, an app that supports great decisions and perfect timing. So glad you are with us today. Please note that you have the ability to review all the hundreds of interviews in our online archive at divination.com. That's divination.com. You can play and or share this program whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Doug Hilton, co-author of The Tao of Addiction and Recovery, Qigong Practices for Restoring the Energy Flow in Mind and Body. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is currently broadcast on KBOO FM in Portland, Oregon. You can get a free subscription to our podcast, which you can also find at divination.com. That's divination.com, or by searching Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel, where you can give us a thumbs up and subscribe. But in any case, feel free to forward a link to your friends. Now, here at KBOO Community Radio, we want to assure our listeners that despite losing federal public radio grants, we will continue to unapologetically represent the voices of our community. With the loss of $110,000 in federal funding, we're counting on supporters like you to help make up the loss so KBOO can continue our important mission in these difficult and unpredictable times. To help keep independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio on the air.
Hello out there, this is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial.